TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Paul Stamets, Mushrooms, Bees, and Saving the World. More than any other scientist practicing today, Paul Stamets has dedicated himself to the life of fungi and that of their underground support system, the mycelium. Stamets says that the mycelia are soil magicians. They give rise not just to mushrooms, but form an integral part of the forest ecosystem. The mycelia are disassemblers, creating the debris fields that then feed their fungal descendants. They also show purpose in choosing microbial allies. And Stamets believes they are part of the Earth's natural internet that is in constant biomolecular communication, governing the ecosystem. Paul Stamets is a frequent guest at the Bioneer conferences and at TED Talks. But the so-called conventional scientists appreciate his work as well. That includes medical research into cancer, as well as the University of Illinois Chicago's Institute for Tuberculosis Research and the Department of Health and Human Services Biodefense Program. He spoke at Town Hall, Seattle on May 4, 2015 to an overflow audience. Paul Stamets.
I'm so honored that I am here in this lifetime, sharing this lifetime with you. I'm going to give a talk that's a rather rapid pace. I have a lot of material to cover, but I'm hoping this talk will forever change your lives for the better. I hope it will give you a new sense of optimism and understanding about the importance of the biodiversity of nature. So, are you ready? We have now entered into 6X, the sixth greatest extinction event known in the history of life on this planet. But this extinction event is not caused by an asteroid impact. It's being caused by an organism, by us. Not only are we the cause of this extinction event, but we're likely to be its victim. Now, we have 8.3 million species on this planet. We're losing about 30,000 species per year. So do the math. In 100 years, we'll lose more than a third of the biodiversity of the organisms on this planet that have gotten us here today. So we are now experiencing a tremendous extinction event. But, you know, if an asteroid was coming to the Earth and slamming it in the next 6 months, I think there's a Bruce Willis movie on this, all the nations of the world would gather together to unify to prevent this extinction event from occurring. Unfortunately, this extinction event is happening over a few hundred years. Geologically, that's just a blip in time. But unfortunately, because of our political situation and the myopia that we live in our 75 to 95 year lifespan, we can't see it coming. Some of us can. But I believe there is a way to help us overcome this extinction event, and it's the way and the path of the mycelium. So the theme of my talk is biodiversity is biosecurity. And I sincerely and deeply believe in that. I came into the field of mycology really within this group around 1975, 1976. We spent a lot of time in the old growth forest. Now, I have a great group of individuals, some of whom are here. We spent a lot of time exploring the old growth forest. It's an ancient library of strains. But looking at the cross sections of habitats, oh, you see trees, you see soil, but saprophytic fungi rot logs. Then the endophytic fungi are inside of the trees and plants and grasses, and they run parallel to the cells, and they're also in the leaves. Hundreds of endophytic fungi can exist cooperatively inside of a single tree, giving a host defensive resistance against pathogens and disease. The mycorrhizal fungi extend the root zones enormously. This is a mycologically astute audience. I think most of you know that. And the parasitic fungi, you know, are coming through the forest, and those with weakened immune systems, they exploit, they take advantage of. But this is really important for you to understand that all plants are part fungi. And scientists for years thought these threads of mycelium they would see when they do sectioning of plants under the microscope, that they were contaminants or parasites. It took a long time to understand. No, these are guilds. These are vast communities that are working quite cooperatively. So what does the mycelium look like? It has lots of different forms, but it's exquisite in its branching. And these are literally growing under your feet and upon every footstep that you take on the ground. Well, people look at fungi and they think of molds on an orange or something like that. But the ecotype of an orange is just the size of a small sphere. And these forest fungi grow over thousands of acres. And they're not limited in that sense. So this is, I'm going to take you to where the largest organism in the world is, Eastern Oregon. And this is a mycelial mat, 2,200 acres in size, 1,665 football fields, and it's one cell wall thick, surrounded by hundreds of millions of microbes trying to gobble it up. And yet it is able to achieve the largest mass of any organism in the world. How does it do that? It's because it's in constant biomolecular communication with this ecosystem. And these fungi are growing through all woodland environments, all grassland environments. There's mosaics of these mycelial mats creating guilds of organisms and cross-communication between the members in the ecosystem. In fact, you know, can these network-based organisms be considered intelligent? Over hundreds of millions of years of evolution, it would conserve energy, it would become more and more efficient through trial and error. But I think this is another one of the examples of the natural intelligence that occurs in the organisms around us. The mycelium produces lots of different compounds. We share a more common ancestry with fungi than we do with any other kingdom. 650 million years ago, we diverged from fungi. In fact, a group of scientists, 3 or 4 years ago, created a new super kingdom called Opisthokonta that joined Animalia and fungi together. We exhale carbon dioxide, we inhale oxygen. Some of our best antibiotics come from fungi to fight bacteria, but very few good antifungal antibiotics are out there because they're harmful to us, because we share this close ancestry. The mycelium chose the route of going underground, externally digesting its nutrients. We chose the route of creating a cellular sac, and then digesting our nutrients within. And that was the divergence of Animalia and fungi. I spent a lot of time in the electron microscope, some examples of mycelial mats. And then the mycelium then is triggered into a mushroom formation. These little hyphal knots occur in response to primarily four environmental stimuli: a drop in temperature, introduction of light. The mycelium comes to the surface when it's moist, when you have rain, exhales carbon dioxide, inhales oxygen. And these mushrooms are phototrophic. They require light in order to form. And then the primordia form. The mycelium can be resident in the ground for months, years, decades, centuries. And then the mushrooms then suddenly form. And over 5 days, the mushrooms form. So the mushrooms are fruit, and they're highly perishable. The mycelium is resident in the ecosystem for a long time. It's got a host defensive immunity and an immune system that allows it to survive under adverse conditions, so it can produce these fruit bodies that then release spores. So the mushrooms then mature. In this case, the portobello-like mushroom spores are formed on the gills. And then the mushrooms invite microvores, people, animals, insects, birds, to come and consume it. And by doing so, spread the spores. But I'm fascinated by the sequence of decomposition, because it struck me that these mushrooms are not just showing up and rotting for no purpose. There's got to be a sequence here. So as the mushrooms then rot in the old growth forest here, and then several days later, my foot is covering approximately 300 miles of mycelium. In a single cubic inch, there can be more than a mile of these fine threads. And the mycelium then, it becomes polynucleate, and these bundles of nuclei go through the networks. And a swath of mycelium, at the breadth of my arms here, there can be literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of end branchings that are polynucleate. There's more than one nuclei at the tips. And think of them as little scientists that encounters a new toxin, a new insect, a new type of wood, a new potential food source. If those genes recombine and a new enzyme or acid is created, where then it codes for that, then what happens, the mycelium surges, it consumes it as a new food source, and then the information comes back channeled to the mother mycelium. So this knowledge becomes resident. Now, I'm going to wax poetic here, but I absolutely believe in this. Looking at the organization of neurons in the human brain, looking at the organization of the computer internet, it also conforms to the same archetype shared by mycelium in the brain and neurons. And I'm an amateur astronomer looking at the organization of dark matter. This is from the deep field view from the Hubble telescope. 180,000 galaxies are encompassed. And this is the dark matter then forms according to string theory. This also conforms to the same archetype shared by that of the mycelium, the computer internet, and neurons. And then when you take the greatest view of the universe and all the galaxies are strung together, it also conforms to the same mycelial archetype. And so when the universe was formed about 13.8 billion years ago, then the Earth then coalesced out of stardust around 4.5 billion years ago. And then the Earth became a solid. And then 3.8 billion years ago, the first life forms emerged. And they were unicellular, and they quickly became multicellular. And then we advanced to 250 million years ago at the time of Pangaea, a great cataclysmic event. It could have been an asteroid impact. Some theories say it's methane hydrate burst from the ocean. Some say volcanoes in Siberia. I don't see these as being mutually exclusive. They, in fact, may have been caused. The asteroid impact could have caused the earthquakes that created the fissures that released the methane hydrate gases. But nevertheless, the Earth was shrouded in dust, massive extinction. Plants and animals died, and fungi inherited the Earth. They gobbled up those debris fields. So then we go to 65 million years ago. And so this asteroid impact 250 million years ago, we think as an asteroid impact. And then when the ecosystem was devastated, this fungus that arose, primarily the predominant one was Reduvio sporinides. It gobbled up the forest debris. And then we advanced to the time of Gondwanaland, 140 million years ago. The continents separated. And then 65 million years ago, we did have an asteroid impact. We all know about this. And the dinosaurs became extinct, and the asteroid impact was right around the Yucatan. So the same thing occurred. The Earth was shrouded in dust. Sunlight was cut off. Massive extinction. And those organisms that paired with fungi had a better chance of survival because fungi, again, re-inherited the Earth. There's a recurring theme here, folks. We experience and we approach extinction events. Our increase in survival is dependent upon pairing with fungi. And we should take the lessons from history and put these into place. So I'm very interested in the decomposition of wood and straw. And first you have the wood, and then you inoculate it with the mycelium. Lots of things happen, and eventually you create soil. So fungi are the grand molecular dissemblers of nature. They're the soil magicians. They build soil. Now, I moved to this small waterfront farm in 1984. This is on Skookum Inlet, between Olympia and Shelton. I'm trying to give Shelton some class. and I moved there, and I have to say, this photograph was very difficult for me to get. I hired an airplane. I went around the inlet three times. I couldn't get it because the window was in front of my camera. And I had this big Nikon camera, and so I told the pilot, I'm going to do one more. I take one more pass, and when I tell you, drop the wing, and I'm going to do something, but don't worry about it. And he goes, what are you going to do? And I go, I paid you. And he goes, I paid you in advance. He goes, yeah. And so he went around, and said, now drop the wing, drop the wing. I didn't want to tell him. I opened up the door of the airplane, and I took off my seatbelt. And I lassoed my seatbelt, and I thought, but I didn't know it was a slip seatbelt. And I fell out of the airplane. And I had one hand on the seatbelt, one leg still in the airplane. I go, well, I'm here. I might as well take a photograph. So with all my strength, I pull myself up into the airplane. And he goes, you're the first person who's ever left my airplane without a parachute, you know? But after I moved on this inlet, I was only here for 2 or 3 weeks. I bought a small farm, and it didn't have a septic system. It had a cedar tub. And after I moved here, 3 weeks, the sheriff showed up. I thought, that was awfully quick. I haven't unpacked yet, you know? But every landowner on this inlet received a summons that you had to replace your septic system with an engineer-approved septic system, or else you'd be physically vacated off the property. Well, what I did is I put in wood chips in a swale, and the mycelium would grow, and it would be very tenacious. And the mycelium I put in was the garden giant mushroom, and it would hold the wood chips together, but there's all sorts of bacteria also growing. And so under the electron microscope, you can see the organization of mycelium is a natural filtration membrane. It creates these cavities that then swell with water. And it selects bacterial communities that are helpful to it in its conquest or is holding onto the ecosystem. The mycelium then is producing all these extracellular droplets. They are selective, preventing the bacteria that are harmful, and then helping the bacteria that are commensal with the mycelium. So we started doing experiments. And so the water quality people came back 1 year later to my property. And they said, you know, I had cows, chickens, and pigs. They more than double. The bioburden increases. The amount of fecal coliform skyrockets, you know, as the animals reproduce. And they said, Paul Stamets, you know, what did you do? I said, because I was marked as a property that was a problem polluter. of coliform bacteria going into the shellfish beds of Skookum Inlet. And I said, I put in these beds of wood chips. They said, well, you have a very unusual result here. We've monitoring the water coming off your property, and you've had a 2-log reduction, 100-to-1 reduction of coliform bacteria. I go, well, I think it's because I put in those wood chips and I inoculated with mycelium. So this story goes through starts and stops and all sorts of problems, but we've developed this method, this highly modular, that we can now grow mycelium in mass, and we can use these totes from the seafood to the fruit industry. And now we have about 15 projects that we've done around Mason County, and there are current projects back east, and using microfiltration to elimination of fecal coliform bacteria using wood chips and the garden giant mushroom. And it turned out that was the best species that we tested of the more than 20 that we put into this series of trials. This has led now to 3 peer-reviewed articles have been published proving that microfiltration works. Using wood chips to be able to capture nutrients, pollution, as well as biological contaminants such as E. coli. So we got very fascinated with this process because the mycelium selects out groups of bacteria that are beneficial to us. Well, we have the microbiome. I'm 100 trillion bacterial cells, you know, with 10 trillion Paul Stamets cells. And so this is lots of buzz about the microbiome. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. If we evolved in the chair of the common ancestors of fungi, what is the microbiome of the fungi that we're growing that looks so healthy? Because the baby in the bubble syndrome is what you have in the laboratory. But if you put the mycelium on the ground, organisms will gobble it up. So when you establish a group of beneficial bacteria that coexist with mycelium, it gives it a host defensive immunity against other pathogens, bacterial. So we did something here. It's not that complicated. We did next-gen sequencing. And we sequenced in the same wood chips that was grown, that was prepared by saltwater fermentation, freshwater fermentation after 2 weeks. Then we inoculated with 2 different species of mushrooms, and we found more than 1,000-fold difference in the relative abundance of bacterial genera between the 2 colonies of mycelium that was perfectly happy and healthy, but the bacterial communities were distinct and unique. I think this is a first step in proving that there is a microbiome associated specifically with the mycelium that determines the downstream characteristics in the population of the bacterial communities that favors it in order to help it to grow, in order to benefit the plants that grow, that create the trees, and then create the debris fields that feed the mycelium. These are deterministic in the sequence of population of other organisms downstream from the inception of these saprophytic fungi, which are the first organisms to gobble, to attach to wood or dead debris as soon as it's being generated. So now, this is important also because E. coli is a pathogen. There are a lot of bacterial pathogens, and many forms of cancer are triggered from infection. About 12% of the cases of cancer are directly related to infection. We received a $2.2 million breast cancer clinical study grant from the National Institutes of Health in association with the Bastyr Medical School and the University of Minnesota Medical School. I was one of the principal investigators on the grant, one of the co-authors. We got the money. We were so excited. And then my co-PIs asked me, well, where should we get the mushrooms? I said, please get them from us. There's so many problems in this process, and we have chain of custody. We know it intimately well. Well, they said, you can't be a principal investigator and a supplier. Choose one. So I resigned as a principal investigator. We got the money. And then they had a jury. Well, how do we know that your mushrooms are better than mushrooms from China or elsewhere? So we got put into a pool. Thankfully, we got chosen as being number one. And so we was focused on turkey tail mushrooms, one of the best studied medicinal mushrooms in the world. And so we began this breast cancer clinical study. Now, 41% of you, on average, will get detectable cancer. 21% of you will die from cancer. About 73% of all cancer drugs come from natural products, something the pharmaceutical industry is reluctant to broadcast, but it's true. They are dependent upon nature. So the results of these studies I'm going to present now, and this is a phase 1 study with stage 2 and stage 3 breast cancer, and the dosage here is no mycelium of turkey tail, 3 grams and 6 grams. And so the immune system is augmented in a dose-dependent basis as you increase the amount. But directly after radiation therapy, your immune system is dramatically impaired, and so you're no longer able to produce as many natural killer cells and cytotoxic T cells, which is your frontline defenses against cancer. And then post-radiation at 1 week, 2 weeks, and at 4 weeks, there's a statistically significant increase on a dose-dependent basis. And those of you who know anything about the stats, this is extremely significant, showing that the immune system is augmented specifically by the increasing the dose of taking turkey tail capsules. This was really fantastic news. Now, it was fantastic news until my mother called me up. And my mother called me up in June of 2009. I couldn't even understand who it was on the phone. She was crying. And I said, "Who is this?" And she goes, "It's your mom, Paul. I'm so worried. I'm so scared." My mother's a charismatic Christian. She has not seen a doctor since 1968. I said, "What's wrong?" And I thought she was in a car accident. And she said, "My right breast is 5 times the size of my left. I have 6 angry lymph nodes in my right side. I'm worried. I'm scared." I go, "Oh my gosh, Mom, why didn't you tell me sooner?" I rushed her to the Swedish Breast Cancer Clinic here in Seattle. Upon the second visit, we got the worst news that you could hear. The tumors, the cancer had crossed the meridian, invaded her sternum, went into her liver, and she had advanced stage 4 breast cancer. She was given less than 3 months to live. We sat down with the oncologist. He said, "You know, you're too old for a mastectomy. We can't do radiation therapy because your immune system is so impaired." And she said, "I see ladies in my 40s and 50s. And in fact, the oncologist said it's the second worst case of breast cancer she's seen in 20 years of practice. The tumor was erupting through her breast. We had the circle meeting. Some of you have gone through this. My mother chose a pine casket, a pink dress, the cheapest casket she could buy because she was going to the Lord. And she chose the hymns for a funeral. I mean, there was a lot of tears, a lot of holding of hands. And then we've been back to the oncologist, and she goes, "You know, but if your immune system could kick this, and there's an interesting breast cancer clinical study going on at Bastyr Medical School at the University of Minnesota, and you might want to start taking turkey tail mushrooms." Well, my mother said, "Well, that's my son's been talking about that," but, you know, she had to hear it from a doctor. So my mother started taking 8 turkey tail capsules per day. She was put on Taxol, had a horrible reaction to it, refused to take it, and was put on Herceptin, a wonderful drug. She was taking turkey tail and Herceptin. She went back to Ellensburg, Washington, knew Herceptin program was there, 50 ladies enrolled in that program. And that was in June of 2009. In January, her tumors had all disappeared, and I'm happy to share this little message with you right now.
Wonderful. Passed all with flying colors. So thank you for your prayers. I love you and I'll check in with you later. Bye-bye.
So my mother now is nearly 90 years of age. She's been tumor free now for the past several years, and this story now has been written up in several medical journals, you know, as a best outcome case. And then an excellent article came out specifically showing that turkey tail compounds in combination with Herceptin enables Herceptin to work better as a chemotherapeutic drug. She had no chembrain, she had no nausea, she had no loss of appetite. And then she told me that the 48 women of the 50 women there and entered the Herceptin program, 48 of them died. My mother was the only one taking turkey tail. One other lady, to the best of her knowledge, survived still with tumors. So this is, I think, potentially paradigm shifting. Now, the use of these medicinal mushrooms go back thousands of years, but then a series of articles started coming out. I'm a victim of Google alerts, Google Scholar alerts. I get way too many. I just got 20 of them just about 5 minutes ago. But then it came out that it found out that the turkey tail mushrooms is a prebiotic for beneficial bacteria, Bifidobacterium and Acidophilus, down-regulating the inflammatory bacteria, up-regulating beneficial bacteria, helping the microbiome, which is where the majority of your immune system is first operational. And then Hei-Ling Liu and I, it's a PhD and MD from the University of Washington Medical School, we wrote this great grant. Unfortunately, because of the sequester, it did not get generated, but we wanted to create a standard protocol for all medicinal mushrooms throughout the world. So it's a great, great grant. I'll be glad to share it with any MDs or oncologists here in the audience. But then I really became focused on oncoviruses, viruses that cause cancer. There's 7 of them here. Most people know about hepatitis, you know, causing liver cancer, and HPV causing cervical cancer. But there's another cancer here, it's called Merkel cell carcinoma, that is caused by the polyoma virus. We all have it. But if you have a certain genetic constitution or makeup, you have 2 severe sunburns when you're a child, you have up to 75% chance of getting Merkel cell carcinoma. Well, only 10 people in the world have ever survived from Merkel cell carcinoma. And so very interestingly, the Fred Hutch Medical Center called me up and said, "Paul, we need to talk to you. We have a very strange case." And I didn't even know about Merkel cell carcinoma. I went up and met with 20 oncologists and 5 histologists. And then there's a star phone in the center. And they said, we have a very unusual case. We need to talk to you about this person. A 58-year-old man is one of the 10 people in the world that totally lost all of his tumors. They highly metastasized all over his body. He did not want to tell them that the oncologists that were treating him, that he was taking medicinal mushrooms. And interestingly, when Julie Smith, my mother's oncologist, upon being interviewed and published in the medical journals, when she was asked if Patty, my mother, had told her oncologist she was taking turkey tail mushrooms, what would her oncologist have told her? Stop taking those mushrooms. Because they want to see if their protocol works. And because the abundance of caution and also the absence of knowledge, it's better for the doctors to play it safe, to say, don't take anything else, let my treatment, you know, take its course. So anyhow, this person was taking a 7-species mushroom blend, and it's been written up in the medical journals. We're real excited about this case. And Dr. Paul Nim is the principal oncologist at Fred Hutch doing this work. I call it the Nim hypothesis. And what he speculated is that the tumors evade detection by your immune system. And so even if you have an active immune system, you can't find docking points to lock and load to go into the tumors. With these mushrooms, putatively, what we believe it does is it decloaks the tumors for immune discovery. And it allows your immune system then to discover the tumors and cytotoxic T cells, natural killer cells, and a protein sequence called P53s, which causes the tumors to basically self-destruct. It's called apoptosis. And so we believe that these mushrooms are helping to unveil the tumors from immune discovery and also causes the tumors to self-destruct.
Paul Stamets. Recorded by Mike McCormick on May 4, 2015. Mike is the host of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Radio in Seattle, Washington. This was the first part of a one-hour talk. Come back when TUC Radio returns for an extraordinary analysis. Paul Stamets will talk about the deaths of honeybees and what can be done about it. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Downloads are free, and we appreciate any size donation to keep TUC Radio on the air. Our email address is tuc@tucradio.org, and the mailing address is Post Office Box 44, Calpella, with a C, like cat, Calpella, California, 95418. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.